Talk Business with Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry, BCCI. Welcome as we hear the perspectives of various subject matter experts and stay up to date on the challenges and solutions around emerging and current trends in business, policies, trade, and more.
Good afternoon and a welcome to another edition of the Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry's Let's Talk Business program. On this week's program, we take you back to the recently held Legacy of Leaders Celebration Luncheon, a prestigious event hosted by the Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry at the Lloyd Erskine Sandiford Center. The luncheon brought together government officials, business leaders, diplomats, entrepreneurs, and key stakeholders to celebrate leadership excellence and the individuals whose contributions continue to shape Barbados's development. The event served as an opportunity to recognize visionary leaders whose dedication, innovation, and commitment have left a lasting impact on the country's business community and national landscape. It also provided a platform for meaningful discussions on leadership, partnership, and the future of Barbados's economy. Guests were treated to a distinguished program that included networking opportunities, corporate engagement, and insightful presentations highlighted by a keynote address from Prime Minister the Honorable Mia Amor-Motley. The gathering underscored the importance of strong leadership in driving growth, fostering collaboration, and creating opportunities. Today, we bring you highlights from that memorable occasion, allowing those who were unable to attend to share in the conversations, reflections, and celebrations that marked the event. Opening the proceedings at the Legacy of Leaders Celebration Luncheon was BCCI President Paul Innes, who reflected on the importance of honoring outstanding leadership and recognizing the contributions of those who have helped shape Barbados's business and economic landscape.
It is my distinct pleasure on behalf of the Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry to welcome you to this very special Legacy of Leaders Luncheon. To our Prime Minister, we are especially grateful for her presence today. We know that she will be taking valuable time from a demanding parliamentary day at a time when important national matters are before the House. The Prime Minister's presence here is deeply appreciated, and it reflects the importance of partnership between government, business, labor, civil society, and the wider national community. This afternoon is not another luncheon on the Chamber's calendar. It is part of a much larger moment in our history. Earlier today, we held the 200th annual general meeting of the Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry. And just before that meeting, I had to try to cast my mind and my spirit back 200 years ago and ask myself a couple questions. But most of all, I wanted to give thanks to those who would have started the Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry. For without them, we would not be here celebrating 200 years. And I personally would not have had the opportunity, the benefit, and the privilege of serving the business community and Barbados nationally. We welcome a new council to continue the work of stewardship, advocacy, and service. To those who have accepted the responsibility to serve, I extend sincere thanks. The work of the Chamber has never been the work of one person, one president, or one council. It has always been a collective undertaking. As we continue our bicentennial anniversary year, following our bicentennial ball and other commemorative activities, today gave us an opportunity to pause and reflect on what 200 years truly mean. 200 years is not only a measure of time, it is a measure of resilience. It is a measure of service. It is a measure of continuity through changing economies, changing industries, changing institutions, and changing national circumstances and priorities. But above all, it is a measure of people. The Chamber's story has been shaped by those who step forward to lead, those who serve quietly behind the scenes, those who build enterprises, those who gave counsel, those who challenge us to do better, and those who understood that business has a responsibility not only to itself, but to the society in which it operates. That is why today's program is so meaningful. We will recognize outstanding social partners. We will salute sector leaders whose enterprise and vision have helped shape the Barbadian economy. We will honor companies that have stood the test of time. We will pay tribute to our living past presidents, to former executive directors, and to long-serving members of staff whose contributions have been woven into the daily life of this institution. We will also see through music, story, multimedia, culture, and youth participation that the story of commerce is not separate from the story of Barbados. It is part of how we work, how we build, how we create opportunities, and how we carry national memory forward. Our anniversary theme, collaborate, advocate, innovate, is not only a theme for a year of celebration, it is a reminder of the discipline required for the future. We collaborate because no sector can build Barbados alone. We advocate because the voice of business must be constructive, responsible, and clear. And we innovate because the next 200 years will not be secured by nostalgia, but by courage, creativity, productivity, and the willingness to adapt. Today, we stand on the shoulders of many. Some are in this room, some are no longer with us, some will be recognized formally today. Others may never have sought recognition, but their work has endured. On behalf of the Chamber, I thank our sponsors and partners for helping to make this afternoon possible. I also want to offer sincere appreciation to the Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry team, and to all those who have worked so hard to bring this program together. In particular, I thank Shanice and Jennifer from our secretariat, who carried so much of the day-to-day work of the secretariat, supported by Jennifer, Clark, and Keisha. Their professionalism, commitment, and quiet persistence are deeply valued. And if you want to see teamwork, you really need to see the secretariat team. To every honoree, we say thank you. We thank you for your leadership, your service, your example, and your contribution to Barbados. To our members and friends, thank you for continuing to believe in the importance of a strong, principled, and relevant chamber. And to the leaders of the future, including the young people who will be part of today's celebration, we ensure that we actually invited the youth to be part of this celebration. May you see not only history, but responsibility to inherit this afternoon. Ladies and gentlemen, let us enjoy this afternoon with gratitude. I hope we get some more market vendor. With pride and with renewed commitment to the shared work of building Barbados. And we will build Barbados through enterprise, partnership, service, and leadership. I welcome you warmly to the BCCI Legacy of Leaders Luncheon, and let's do enjoy. Thank you.
In this week, when I reflect on being in this job for 8 years, I would have rather have been introduced by a previous prime minister. And I know that if there was anyone capable of raising voices from the dead, it is you. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, let me say how honored I am to be here today, because this has been, for you, this celebration of this 200th anniversary has been a significant event for the Barbados Chamber of Commerce. And I want to say that if someone hadn't called an election, I suspect that I might have been engaging you sooner. But I would be happy to reprimand that person for having called the election, disrupting this engagement here today. 200 years ago, this Chamber of Commerce had, in 1825, a name that most Bajans do not know. It wasn't called the Barbados Chamber of Commerce, as I understand it. It was called the Commercial Hall. And a commercial hall was where the people of commerce gathered and where the merchants of the day would reason with one another and the business community sought order within the context of that colonial regime, and where I suspect, because of the nature of the governance of the country, they probably had a greater outreach than even now. I start here because it is important for us to recognize that in this room lies the capacity for this country to determine where it wants to go. I have the honor of helping to pilot the ship, but you determine ultimately through your leadership and investment, through your skills, whether we are capable of moving to the next stage. I reflected that this year is 8 years. In fact, yesterday was 8 years of the first official day of government. Yesterday was 8 years when the private sector and the labor movement and members of my cabinet, who had been sworn in less than 24 hours, met to determine whether we were prepared to save the Barbados dollar. 8 years later, it clearly worked. At the same time, the path along the way was disrupted by a global pandemic. And in spite of that global pandemic, we were able to stabilize the country and begin the platform for growth. Today I stand before you, leading a country that has had 20 straight quarters of economic growth, but a country that is faced both domestically and externally with challenges which cumulatively could destabilize us once again, or which, if overcome, can be the boon in our sails to allow us to go so rather than to dip. And the question remains, what is it that we collectively must do to be able to reach that pathway, where instead of the comfort of the first 60 years of 2 to 2.5% growth, sometimes 3, that we set new horizons that ought to be within our reach to reach 3 to 5% growth on a consistent basis, subject, of course, to global headwinds or natural disaster strikes. There are 4 words. I woke up at 4 o'clock this morning and all I could think was, what are you going to say? What are you going to say? And there are 4 words every which way I turn that keep coming back. Resilience, which a former leader of the opposition accused us of using as a buzzword. But if you don't know resilience in an island, you don't know who you are, because you can't survive. Innovation, which you have added as part of your theme, but also productivity and competitiveness. And I want us to focus on those 4 because it's not just a conversation. And it has to translate to action, not individually either, but collectively. I have every confidence that over the course of the next few years, that this country can set new standards and can become world class. We have done it in other areas of economic endeavor. January 2020, I addressed the country, asking the country to engage in a 7-year program that would allow us to become world class. Little did I know that within 2 months, the entire country would be shut down and affected for the better part of 3 years. If we accept that, then we change our horizon and we push it out a little longer. But the goal of becoming world class is absolutely critical. Because you don't have size. You don't have deep pockets. What are you going to use to commend yourself to the rest of the world? And the private sector starts from a position of strength. Because whether we like it or not, you have the dominance and the girth, maybe not to compete with government, but certainly to direct and shape not just your enterprise, but the workers and the communities, and by extension, the families that are associated. But for you to do that, it can't be with you catching breath and cracking, trying to catch up. You have, as the great cricketers of this nation have shown us, to settle yourself, to watch the ball, and to have the timing correct in how you play the shots. And to do that, resilience first and foremost in a world where within 24 hours we can face wipeout risk. I say prayers every day, and that is among the prayers. Because I know, and you, I suspect, know, that if we are truly badly hit because of the unfortunate housing pattern since Hurricane Janet that led to all the flat roof houses that we have across Barbados, that we could lose as much as 60% of our housing stock in less than 24 hours. That is why the government has continued to urge new housing practices. That is why within the Ministry of Public Works and Infrastructure, I have said to Rommel Springer, do not come up for air until the building code is in place. And it is not a building code that is intended to make the process of construction and development harder, but it is one that will have to seek the reshaping of the burden such that those who are building above a certain value, all of you hire professionals, and the professionals have a duty of care to you to ensure that what they're supplying you is fit for purpose, in which case those professionals should be able to certify the appropriateness of the project in compliance with the building code. And then government takes responsibility for those properties below a certain value, whether it is $250,000 or $300,000, recognizing that we have to show our artisans how to build differently and how to strengthen differently. That is why each of you in here, as employees and as employer, contributes 0.25% of your income, your salary, sorry, to the Resilience and Regeneration Fund, and why the government as a whole will contribute 0.35% of GDP each year. That is why we have innovated and won awards across the world for debt for nature swaps, debt for climate swaps, and we're now breaking new ground again with the IDB, with the World Bank, with the CDB, and with the Latin American Development Bank for doing the first ever debt for social swap that will hopefully help us go to be able to unleash sufficient savings to strengthen our health sector. But resilience is not only against the climate. Resilience has to be also against international economic shock. And the resilience that we need, particularly given what is going on in the Straits of Hormuz, and that could be complicated if there is a climatic variant in Panama, as has happened a couple years ago when the water was not sufficient to allow the movement of ships at pace, means that we are a victim of circumstances. And I will confess readily to you now that in the first two terms, we had a hands-off approach with respect to the Fair Trading Commission because it was a quasi-regulatory, a quasi-judicial body seeking to regulate. And we were a government with all the seats. And I have heard from many of you that you want an opposition and you want an opposition. And I didn't mind one, but the public didn't give us one. Uh-huh. So that we have had to become our own opposition. And if you talk to my members of cabinet, they will tell you that perhaps I've excelled too much at that recently. But we took a decision once the war broke out in the Middle East, recognizing that the pathway which we had set for ourselves this year stood to be significantly impaired. The price of gas in this country should be $4.55 a liter. Let us not get confused. The measures announced by the Minister of Finance in the budget would have brought it down to $4, the equivalent of $4.20 now. I said this to the manufacturers last week, so those who heard, please forgive me. But when they came 10 days ago to ask me to move from $3.72 to $4.20, I told them to draw brakes, because we can withstand heavy showers, but we cannot withstand a deluge. And our role as a government is to steady the gradient, steady the slope, so that if the war is still a live factor in 2 months' time, the public will have to take a little more. But what we don't want is to allow a deluge to come, and happens with every flood, there is damage and loss of life when the deluge is too aggressive. At the same time, we know that we are not going back to where we were 8 years ago. And therefore, there will be no unlimited subsidies in circumstances where the country cannot carry it. But so long as we can carry it, we will help. And that is why, in the package of measures, in the budget, keeping faith with what we told the country across, I'm not sure what's happening, but in the package, in the budget, we were able to deliver on our promises for the cost of living allowances for pensioners, for those on welfare, and for those who are indigent, and be able to give them the equivalent of $1,200 a year to help ease the pressure of the cost of living, while undertaking significant tax reform for those at the bottom and the middle end, and effectively making it possible that those earning $50,000 on top of the $25,000 tax-free, which means those earning $75,000 and under, would end up paying no taxes in the country so long as the country can afford to return their taxes to them with a compensatory income credit. What I call in the election the government meeting turn. So you pay every month, and at the end of the year when you file, so long as the government can afford it, the government gives you back every cent. You may say, how you get that done? Well, we've been doing it for the last 7 years. For people earning between $25,000 and $35,000 in this country. And what they've effectively been able to do is to get back, because we have so managed our affairs that we were able to return that money to those taxpayers. I say this because our ability to restructure our corporation taxes is at the core of our having a little more flexibility. But we are still conscious, as I said at the opening of the port yesterday of Berth 6, that our border taxes, and this should be of interest to you in the chamber, our border taxes are underperforming. And if we can get them to perform appropriately, then the issue of continuous tax reform becomes something that the Minister of Finance and the government would entertain. So that from the perspective of energy and international economic shock, it triggered another decision. Bring everyone together in the energy sector to see how we can remove the blockages that have been caused in the unfolding of renewable energy in this country, to allow us to move from 16% where we are to at least 50% by December 2027. And thereafter, for us to settle shortly whether our ultimate destination is 75, 80, or 85% renewable. Because if we are hit by that awful hurricane, we will lose the PV panels, possibly. We will lose the wind farms, possibly. We must have always the capacity to have generating capacity for electricity to maintain national security and law and order in the country. I am happy to report that the National Task Force, which has been established, has had four major meetings and a series of subcommittee meetings. And the minister, Senior Minister Simmons, will be required shortly to address Parliament in a ministerial statement on the details of what we are doing to ensure that we remove the regulatory obstacle that will cause us to fail to achieve the target of 50% in the next 18 months now, because we're almost in June. If we can do that, it means then that that $500 million that is locked up in the banking system is unlocked. But at the same time, this government came to office on this occasion repeating over and over three things, because having stabilized the economy, having started the beginnings of growth, we are now after 20 quarters seeking to move faster, higher growth, but inclusive growth. And inclusive growth means that that other thing, which in my mind is at the core of productivity and competitiveness in this country, ownership, enfranchisement, that other thing becomes entirely possible. The government of Barbados has brought the debt to GDP ratio down from 177.5%, including it was 156 with another 20% owed to all of y'all, what was called adversarial financing. We've brought it down from 177 to 93% now where it is. In order for us to bring it further down in this environment, there are things that we must do and will not shy away from doing. The expansion of the hospital and the construction of two new polyclinics, the strengthening of national security, and we'll come back to that. The road infrastructure, although Jamaica has now shown what is possible by the tokenization of tolls, with the proceeds being owned by ordinary citizens. But those things that we must do are unlikely to be done by you. And therefore, we have a solemn duty to be able to create opportunities for enfranchisement and ownership for investment for not just you in this room, but for those who also own the rest of the almost $15 billion in savings in the domestic savings in the banking system, earning 0.1%. With inflation at just under 2% and possibly higher this year because of the oil prices. You don't need to be a mathematician to know that cumulatively, after a while, those returns will mean that you are effectively being pauperized. And therefore, we believe that the opportunity to create the investment opportunities for those of you in this room and those across every household in this country to participate in creates the space for government to, in a laser-like manner, focus on those things which no one else in this country is likely to focus on.
If you missed today's edition or any of the previous editions, you can log on to starcomnetwork.net, view in the podcasts for Let's Talk Business. Until next time, you take care. That's it for another edition of Let's Talk Business with Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry, BCCI. Join us again next time as we hear the perspectives of various subject matter experts and stay up to date on the challenges and solutions around emerging and current trends in business, policies, trade, and more.